This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
If Florida State is doing national championships, ACC championships,
back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get more banged and bruised, work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success to either something I can really do this.
This is the Unconquered Podcast on VSporto's Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and for this episode, we're going to continue with some questions and answers, questions from the premium subscribers over at NoleDigest.com, where we're going to address, we did the offense and the defense in the last podcast. Now we're going to address some of the other questions, some of the what we could call special teams kinds of questions, not specifically dealing with special teams on the field, but basically questions that don't deal with the offense or the defense specifically, but more general things. So we're going to go ahead and get right into it with this first segment. So the first question is, can you talk about what Fisher has said about last year's team's lack of effort privately? I know he was always positive about the team, saying a win is a win, but was he privately frustrated with the team's entitled attitude? I don't think there's any question about that. The answer to that is yes. He was frustrated with the team's entitled attitude, and we heard that in camp last year. You'll remember me, those of you who listened to this podcast last year, will remember me saying that I was hearing out of camp that that team was soft and that the coaching staff was really, really pushing them, and they were, you know, yelling and shouting and really trying to motivate them and push them and sort of kick him in the butt all camp because they were frustrated with how those guys were just, there was no fire at that point in the season. And we saw that really carried through the rest of the season. If you watched Fisher's opening early camp interviews from this year, you could hear him let out a little bit of what was going on and what he was, you know, what he would let somebody know behind the scenes. He let it out a little bit when he talked about how last year's team really didn't seem to be interested in day to day the grind and keeping the energy up, that they were more motivated by crisis. You know, that they'd flip the switch, that sort of thing. And that was frustrating to him. Now he loved coaching that team. He loved, working with Winston and these other guys, but there's no doubt that he was frustrated with the overall performance, with the lack of energy and effort at times from that team. And I think he's very excited to work with a younger team that's much hungrier. And there's no doubt about that. I've heard that consistently through camp, that this is a very hungry group. It's an inconsistent, a young group, but it's very hungry. And there's some young leadership that's developing. So that's all a good sign, if you're a Florida State fan moving forward. So, the next question then is there more to it with the recent high profile decommits, prior to the season starting? It seems natural to happen, but I've heard rumblings that there's something more internal, such as you need another Brewster, type coach or recruiter to help. Do you have any insight there? Are there any other potential flips, good or bad, that you anticipate? I don't actually think that there's a whole lot to this in terms of, you know, there being, you know, something extra special, double secret probation on the inside that's going on with these decommits, specifically the decommits of Isaac Nauta and the receiver from McCullough, Keith Gavin. Those guys are not, you know, Gavin's decommit was a bit of a surprise, but, you know, those guys, this is not a situation where Florida State just blew it. With Gavin, you know, I think the bigger thing is that Alabama has really been pushing hard for him as a priority, and he's looking at that situation and he's looking at the Florida State situation. And at this point, I think he's regarding that Alabama situation as more promising for his future, than what he's seeing at Florida State in terms of depth chart and other things. That's at least what we've heard. I don't know that there's a whole lot more to it with the Nauta situation. Again, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot more to it other than that he is from the Georgia area and Georgia really made him a priority. And I think he found them, he started to feel more at home with some of what they're doing. I think he got a little bit spooked potentially by Florida State recruiting a second tight end. I think that they're, or maybe upset by that. I mean, there's some chance of that. It's not, you know, we don't have, like I said, a special inside scoop on this, but I don't think that there's, like I said, I don't think that there's anything specific internal in terms of that. You know, would having another high energy recruiter like Brewster help? Well, sure. But I don't think that really this staff needs to have a whole lot of wholesale changes to recruit or whatever. I do think that right now it's hard to recruit as Florida State in the 2015 offseason because of how Florida State has been constantly been in the news for negative things. And as a result, the image is just, you know, Florida State's image has taken a beating. And it's difficult to recruit with that on the in-season point. And you know, the best thing that can happen for this staff is to get it into the season and at least have some football product and get kids around and feel the atmosphere and again, feel at home in Tallahassee to come in and feel the electricity and Doak Campbell and that sort of thing rather than hearing other people talk about, oh, you're thinking about Florida State. Well, that's a bunch of criminals there. You know, this sort of thing. That stuff does wear on a kid, and it wears on the family. So, you know, I think that's the bigger factor. As far as other flips, I think right now there is one additional guy that I expect to eventually decommit, and it's unfortunate because I think he's one of my two or three favorite prospects in this class, and that's Jamal Couch, the kid from Alabama. As of right now, I don't think he winds up sticking in the class. They're going to push hard and try to keep him, but and you know, he fits exceptionally well on the Florida State roster. He's exactly what they want at that spot, most likely fitting at the linebacker spot. But I think he ultimately winds up decommitting and staying in state. So, you know, don't be surprised if that happens. Again, that's not a guarantee, but I think that's probably most likely. Another question: looking at in a prior podcast, I made the statement. It says you'd mentioned in a prior podcast that Jimbo may possibly be one of the top two college football coaches in the country. Who are your top five, and what criteria, whether that be play calling, game or clock management, recruiting, previous success, etc., do you use to rank them? It's a really good question, actually, and I had to think about this a good bit before I started recording. I have a top five, and I'll just say that this is sort of tier one. These are guys that I would put in top five, and you can order them however you want. But these are guys that if you're starting a program right now, these are the guys that I think you want to hire. You want one of these five guys running your program. You want them running the show. And I would say that five is Nick Saban. I think that's an obvious one. Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, Jimbo Fisher, and Gus Malzahn. I think that group of five is if I'm looking to hire any coach in the country, I'm narrowing that's my short list. I want one of those five guys to be running my program. And you think about this, the reason for that, my criteria basically boil down to the following. First and foremost, you have to have an excellent, energetic, talented recruiter, charismatic recruiter. You cannot build a program without being able to get players. And every one of those guys, Meyer, Fisher, Harbaugh, Saban, and Malzahn, are guys that can actually... They can recruit kids. They've shown historically that they can recruit. Secondly, I want a guy who's both respected and connected in the coaching community. All five of those guys are. And I want a guy who's humble enough to hire other coaches and other people in the program smarter than himself. This is something that Jimbo Fisher has done well. This is something Nick Saban has done well. Urban is not I don't think he's ever really called a play. He's not an offensive coordinator. He runs he has his own ideas of what he wants on offense. But what he really does is he goes out and he finds excellent assistant coaches. He finds, Tom Herman, going back to, you know, the days at Florida, with Dan Mullen, with Charlie Strong at the defensive coordinator spot. He's always surrounded himself with excellent assistance. And so you want to find a guy that is willing to, first of all, and second, able to attract excellent assistants to coach with him. And again, you can see this with Saban. You can see this with Jim Harbaugh. He's extremely well connected. He's a guy that's going to bring in guys both from the NFL and elsewhere. Gus Malzahn, you know, you've got a guy that is willing to go out and get a Will Muschamp and to change some of the things that he does to accommodate what Muschamp needs on that side of the ball. That, I think, is absolutely necessary to do. And again, Jimbo Fisher, you look at bringing in Mark Stoops, which was an excellent hire, recognizing the talent of a Jeremy Pruitt and bringing him in, being able to bring in a Charles Kelly, who, as maligned as he is by Florida State fans, is an excellent coach. You know, these guys, being able to go out and get excellent coaches and being able to put those guys in positions to help your team is critical. Thirdly, you want a guy to be on the cutting edge. You want him to be able to be creative and flexible, able to adjust to personnel when the pieces aren't there. So I don't want a guy who can only run one thing. I want a guy who's adjusting and adapting with the way that the game is moving. So, you know, this is where actually I think somebody like Fisher, somebody like Meyer, actually you may prefer them a little bit over a Saban, who, you know, he's only now starting to adjust on certain things in terms of how he's running his defense. I think FSU was already years ahead of what Bama was doing defensively back in 2013. I was talking with the defensive staff about some of those differences, and Bama has begun to transition to some of those things. Gus Malzahn, I think, is probably one of the best offensive minds in the game at this point. He's a guy that's on the cutting edge. The other thing is, you'll notice, outside of Nick Saban, all of these guys are offensive coaches. And as a rule, I want a guy who can coach offense. Now, Saban gets a pass because he's always been able to bring in good offensive minds. But as a rule, I want my head coach to be offensive-minded first. I want a guy who can coach offense, and especially, I want a guy who can ensure I can have good quarterback play every year, because nothing is more important to the sustained success of a top program than maintaining good quarterback play. And I saw, when I was at Florida State in the early 2000s, what a bad quarterback coach can do to a program. When quarterbacks don't know what they're doing, when they're not coached well, when they're fundamentally unsound, when they're not putting the football where they're supposed to be, it can submarine a program that has tremendous talent. So quarterback gurus always get a bump in my system. So I actually have a higher view, say, of a Mark Richt, who is pretty much always going to have a good quarterback, at least a competent quarterback at Georgia, than a lot of people, because I know I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to constantly win with that guy. I may not win a championship with him, but you got to remember, Georgia was one play away from winning a national championship in 2012. So, you know, he's just, by the way, just off of my list in terms of the top five. But, you know, quarterback guys who can handle quarterbacks get a bump in my system. Now, Meyer is on that list despite his ability. He's not a quarterback guy, but he's always able to bring quarterbacks in and have a system that adapts to what he's got in terms of quarterback to get good quarterback play. So there you go. And that also brings in, I want a guy who has a clear integrated system on both sides of the ball that works together, that he knows he has a vision of what he wants that makes sense in today's game. And that requires that he understands, this is the fifth thing, I want a guy who understands both sides of the football. So I want an offensive-minded guy, but I want someone who understands the whole picture. And this is where somebody like Will Muschamp, gets ruled out. He understands defense, but I'm with some of the things that he said in press conferences about offense, it was funny because I found myself going, wow, I just don't know that he understands offensive football. And on the other hand, that's where game management comes into play for some of the hurry up, no huddle guys. I think some of those hurry up, no huddle guys, they know how to give defenses fits, but they don't understand how to run the full team so that they don't put their defense in bad spots, and they're not, sometimes the ego gets out of line, so that, you know, they're trying to, you know, run up as many points on their offensive side, and they can always blame the defensive coaches for not doing their job, but they're actually not putting their team overall in the best position. So that's where some of the hurry up, no huddle guys fall off for me. But I think with Malzahn, the reason that he's on that list in spite of being a hurry up, no huddle guy is because of the emphasis that he places on running the football out of the hurry up, no huddle, and the different speeds that they run at there, and the way that they are creative in terms of, you know, the little sugar huddles and things that they do. They're able to do a lot of those things to help their defense out, to change the momentum and to affect the flow of the game, not just on the offensive side, that I think he understands a lot of that. And again, bringing in a Muschamp, I think, again, helps his rep in my book in that view. Then the other thing, you know, number six, I would say a track record of building and sustaining a program. All of those guys have shown that they can build they're, you know, Malzahn has still got to show that he can sustain a little bit, but I think, you know, I don't think there's much question that he can. And then finally, I would say I want someone who has shown by and large high character and attention to detail. And that's where a guy like Fisher, who emphasizes high character and he's honest, if there's nothing else, Fisher is generally honest. That's where I think he jumps ahead on some of these things. And I think Malzahn also in that book, those are guys that put high attention to detail. So less important to me are things like clock management. That's something that can be improved. You just have one of your assistants work with that. It's not a big deal. Other coaches on my list in terms of, you know, just out of the top five, I think Gary Patterson is the best non-Saban defensive head coach. You can put Charlie Strong in that same short list in terms of that. Bobby Petrino is an outstanding coach. I wouldn't want him coaching my program because of some of the other things. But if you're just there to win games, that guy knows offense. He's very similar to Fisher in a lot of regards, and in some places he's better than Fisher as an offensive mind. And you know he's always going to have you competitive. Rich Rodriguez is on that list. I think he's an excellent coach. You know, obviously the Michigan situation just was a bad fit, but I think he's an excellent coach and is going to win in most places. Mark Richt again is on that list. And a guy that I think you have to mention that isn't a guy that I would necessarily hire for any job, but if you talk about a guy that I want a guy that for one game where my life is on the line and I may not have the talent edge, I might want Bill Snyder to be my guy. And that might be over any of my top five. Not just thinking about building a program, but in terms of I've got to win one game with my life on the line, and you know, you get one season to prepare for that one game, it might be Bill Snyder. Because what that guy has done at Kansas State is remarkable. Because there's no reason Kansas State should ever win a game. And again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on the VSporto Seminole Sports Radio Network. We're going to look at the last few questions from our premium board here. First question is very, very easy. Looking at a general question. Any Thursday night games this season? Short answer, no. There is a Friday night game at Boston College. Not a huge concern, but no Thursday night games this season. Who are the teams most likely to upset FSU? It's a good question. I would say out of the, you know, obviously a lot of people are circling that Clemson game and the Georgia Tech game. And then, of course, you've got the rivalry games of Florida and Miami where, you know, those are always on the list. So I'm going to pull from teams most likely to upset FSU, not on that list. And I would say of that group, I would say Louisville is the most likely loss. And actually, Louisville is a game that I think Florida State fans should be concerned about because of what they have on defense. That's going to be a really, really good defensive team this year. And, you know, people may say, well, you know, they lost so much to the draft. How are they going to be good? But you got to remember, they got three all-league caliber transfers. With Devontae Fields from TCU on the edge, you know, he brings them an immediate pass rushing threat. With Josh Harvey Clemens and Shaq Williams from Georgia, who came over with Todd Grantham when he went to Louisville this last year. And they sat out a year and they're ready to go. So those guys, all three of those guys step in. So where they lost some talent on defense last year, they're plugging and playing with potentially better guys. And their defensive front seven is going to be as good as anybody in the country. And then you put Shaq Williams and Josh Harvey Clemens in that secondary, and suddenly you've got a pretty fierce defense. You've got a defense you got to worry about. And then with Bobby Petrino on offense, they're going to always be competitive. They're going to be able to score points on offense. So, what you know, that's where I think the Louisville game is one that you really need. If you're Florida State, you really need to be concerned about. That's a game I think you've got to be concerned about. I think NC State is a game where even though it's in Tallahassee and the Louisville game is also in Tallahassee, even though those games are in Tallahassee, those are games you got to worry about. NC State, team that had Florida State on the ropes in Raleigh last year, they're a better team this year than they were last year. And Jacoby Brissett is the kind of quarterback who can get hot and can really hurt you. And they're going to be able to run the football out of the spread. And, you know, if you've got some concerns on defense with Florida State right now about stopping the run, NC State is going to be able to run the football out of that spread and potentially shorten that game, give you something to worry about on offense, and maybe they come in and, you know, you turn it over a couple times and get beat. So I think those are two games right off the bat that I would say I would worry about. You know, the Boston College game is an interesting game because it's early enough that, you know, this young offense still probably hasn't gelled enough. But I'm just not sure Boston College can score enough points to win that game. Now it's going to be the interesting thing is whether Fisher is going to be willing to run the football against that brick wall of a front seven they've got. They were second in the country against the run last year, and they're returning almost everybody in the front seven. So, you know, early in the season when, you know, this team is still struggling to throw the ball, are they going to need to throw the ball to beat Boston College? So that's another one that, you know, could be on the radar. I don't think they lose that game, but, you know, that's on the radar. Out of the others, I mean, I think actually Florida is another one to be concerned about if they have any sort of health late in the year because of how good their defense is. Any team with that good a defense or that good a secondary is a team you have to worry about. I'm not that worried, actually, about Georgia Tech or Clemson. I think Florida State wins both of those games. But, you know, I think Miami could potentially give them trouble. I think Florida is, because of that defense, you got to worry about them. And then I think Louisville and NC State are actually bigger concerns. So I'm a little bit in the minority in terms of what I actually think is going to be happening on FSU's schedule and where some of the threats are going to come. So that's related to then the next question: who is the biggest threat to Florida State in the Atlantic? I actually think it's Louisville. I think Louisville is the biggest threat because of what they have on defense. Again, they're a team that should be able to stop the run. They're a team that's going to have some playmakers in the secondary, and against this young offense, you know, you've got to have some concern against the team that might be able to bottle you up in the running game. And a Bobby Petrino offense is always going to have something for you. It's going to have some wrinkles. So that I think is the biggest threat to Florida State in the Atlantic. I think Clemson takes a step back this year, despite having arguably the best player in the country at quarterback. I just don't think their lines are where they have been. And I start up front. Louisville's going to have a great defensive line, great front seven. Clemson, they've got some bodies there, but they're all really, really young, and they're just not where they were last year. Last year, they could rotate two first-team defensive lines. This year, they're hoping to have one, and that's a big difference. So I think Clemson may be a three-loss team this year. Don't be surprised if Clemson loses to Miami. You know, and that's not because Clemson will be a bad team. I just think, you know, there's enough parity right now that, you know, I think they take a step back. Even though that quarterback and that offense, I mean, they're going to average 40 some points a game. But, you know, they may lose to a Miami. I think Louisville in week three, I think it is, that they play with Clemson's DJ Reader, their best defensive lineman out with personal issues right now. If he's still out for that Louisville game, I'm favoring Louisville in that game. So, you know, I think Louisville's the biggest threat to Florida State in the Atlantic. NC State, I don't think is going to win the division. It's possible, you know, it's an outside chance that they could potentially upset Florida State if everything fell right. But I just don't think they win enough games elsewhere in the division to actually threaten for the Atlantic. So I think it really goes Florida State, who should be favored to win the division, then Louisville, and then Clemson. And it's clumped a lot tighter than I think a lot of people realize. And the final question from our premium board has to do with the confidence of the coaches and such on this team's season behind closed doors. Are they quietly confident? Do they like the talent? Or are they hoping they don't lose to USF? Well, that's a little bit complicated because it's not actually a situation like it has been in the past where, you know, in 2013, they were Cheshire Cats. That team, that staff had a sense that they may have something. And it's partly because they knew what they had in Winston. But it's one of those, like, you know, we may be a little better than people think we are. I don't think we see that. They do really like the talent, but I wouldn't say that they're quietly confident. I think they're hopeful. I think that's a better way to describe the attitude that I've gotten coming out of camp. You know, one of my sources that I trust the most has said that, you know, he kind of expects basically an 8-win season this year. And, you know, with a couple breaks more and, you know, things develop a little bit, then definitely better than that. But he's saying, you know, I'm thinking 8 wins. So, you know, and he's been pretty reliable in the past. Now he tends to be a little bit more pessimistic. He even didn't expect the 2013 team to be what they were. He was still pessimistic even at that point on some things. So take that for what it's worth. But, you know, he was saying, you know, there are so many things that have to snap together at this point that, you know, you're depending on a lot of things. But at the same time, the talent's so good, and there's so much there that they can improve so quickly across the board. And if just a few things do snap into place, then this team is really, really good. So it is what you might expect from a team with such a young group that's so talented. It's basically we don't even know what we have. But it could be pretty good, and it's probably going to be pretty frustrating at times. So I would say it's hopeful but realistic would be the kind of attitude around this team. They really like the attitude and the chemistry of this team. They like how hard they've fought and how much energy there's been. But there are still enough concerns that it's more hopeful than it is confident at this point. The schedule sets up at this point to where that actually can work fine. You get past Boston College in week 3 and you've still got a little bit of room to grow before you actually play another team with a pulse. And so, you know, you could be 5-6-0 and not necessarily all that good early in the year, and then actually start making some of those leaps and getting some confidence and all of those things from early in the season, and then it turns into much better than an 8-win season. You know, it turns into an 11 or 12 win season potentially because of the talent you have on the roster. I still think that 10-2 is probably a reasonable expectation for this group, based on, again, that sort of mixture of hope and realism. But, you know, it remains to be seen. It'll be very interesting as this season goes on. Well, that'll do it for us. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. This is Jason Staples, your host, signing off. Thanks for listening. I made this.